Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, so I thought it, like, the letterbox thing's probably going to stick now as a feature every week. However, I felt it was important to read the reviews of this for context, because I thought this movie was woeful. But I want to know how you felt about it.
Well, it was my suggestion. So for context, I haven't seen any of the films that I picked this month, because, as everyone knows, I don't really watch horror films outside of doing this for the podcast. So at this point, when it comes to my month, I'm just guessing. I'm like, yeah, that'll do. That's the one. And this month, I basically went, yeah, I fancy that person. We'll do a film with that person in. So I had never seen this before. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was quite fun.
I didn't think it was scary, and I didn't think it was funny. Two essential ingredients for a horror comedy. And you lied. You have seen movies this month. You saw Attack the Block. That's what you
said. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, I had seen Attack the Block. That's true. Apologies. I forgot.
And you've seen Slaughterhouse Rules as well.
Oh, shit.
So the first two movies we covered this month.
The next two movies I picked for this month. I think my original plan was just to pick films with people I fancied in them. And then I couldn't find enough for, like, my big crushes. So I just picked two films that I had seen that were horror, technically. But, you know, I really enjoyed, I thought it was quite fun. I thought it was really funny. I was chuckling quite a lot.
Mm.
And I don't think it was particularly scary. I will give you that. I think mostly because they give away the premise very early in the film. Like, it's the first thing you learn is the sisters are killers. But I thought it was a good film. I thought the gore was great. And I think it's got enough horror elements that if I do feel like if I wasn't used to watching horror movies at this point, I probably would have found this scary.
Why is this not the movie with George Groom and Aaron Taylor Johnson in?
That would have been hilarious.
What was Aaron Taylor Johnson up to in 2017?
Nowhere Boy.
No, Nowhere Boy came out like 2011.
I don't know. Should we have a look?
Because he'd already done that one MCU movie that he was in. Because Age of Ultron came out 2 years before this.
Oh, yeah, that's true, actually. I forget, like, 2017 and was, like...
Both the Kick-Ass movies had come out by that point as well.
So he was doing The Wall.
Never even heard of it.
So it was just after he'd done Nocturnal Animals.
Oh, that's apparently a good film. Tom Ford.
Yeah, and then he did The Wall in 2017, which is a war thriller.
Oh, when you said The Wall, my mind immediately went to that fucking Matt Damon Great Wall of China movie.
The film follows two American soldiers, Aaron Taylor Johnson and John Cena, trapped by an Iraqi sniper.
Da, 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 da.
I mean, I feel like John Cena's the kind of man you want in that situation, because I can't see him.
John can't see him.
But yeah, so yeah, that's your answer. He was in The Wall with John Cena.
Yeah, because like... He went for a weird period. He was in a fucking Oliver Stone movie with that other guy who they thought was going to be massive. The guy who played John Carter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're not talking about Aaron Taylor Johnson. I wish we were. That guy's fascinating. I love him. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, the problem with this film, I think, is the tone and the performances. Because it's a weird kind of thing to see, like, a reverse Promising Young Woman. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of what this movie is. First off, I will say that is one thing that I did like about this movie. Now, anybody being sexually assaulted or preyed upon on a night out is not nice. Let's get that out in the open, up top.
But it's interesting to see the flip, like, yeah, being two women.
It is interesting to see, like, it from the other side. So, like I said, kind of like a reverse Promising Young Woman. So it is interesting to kind of see, and like it's so weird as well. Like, it's so weird to see it from like the female perspective when it comes to like horny guys, because in either scenario, when a man is preying upon a woman in this situation, they're always seen as like overly sexual, like horny guys who just want to get their end away. And even in this, like, that is the purpose of this, is that they are looking for guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so fascinating to see that whether the guy is the one being the predator or the prey, their behaviour doesn't ever really change.
No.
And it is really fascinating to see a certain subsection of men. and I hate to use the phrase not all men, but it isn't all men, especially in this scenario. But it's like, it's fascinating to see like that one specific subsection of guys who is like, oh, you are going to do this regardless. Like, if a woman pays you no interest or is sexually aggressive to you, your behaviour doesn't change regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it is fascinating to see, not so much with Jim, because Jim's just a weird dude anyway. He's a fucking dinosaur building man who's whatever. But like, Alex's behaviour does not change at all.
No.
And it's like, and to the point where he's like, oh, these girls, like, and it's so weird as well, because one thing that it never shows, and it shows glimpses of it with his character in this, and I'm not sure if it's intended to add an extra layer to his character, so maybe I'm giving the performance or the writing too much credit, or maybe I'm reading it wrong. However, it does kind of show you the insecurities of men with, like, big bravado, because when the girls say that they don't drink, he puts the stuff in the girls' drinks because he's not confident in Jim, but it also kind of shows that maybe he's not confident in himself.
See,
that he can't get the girls to be attracted to him without doing something to drink. But then it also is like, why did you have that in the first place? Are you just a date rapist?
Well, no, because
like,
he goes
general?
And gets it.
Yeah, but like,
you literally see him get it off of his mate.
But like, you know, so
see. So, out of the four characters, Alex is probably my favourite, weirdly enough. Which is odd, because the character he plays is normally the character that I would be like, oh my god, he's such a douchebag. I think the thing with Alex is they do a really good job of giving him layers. Like, he is still the very bravado-driven, oh, I can fuck any woman, look how hard I am, like, oh. But then you see these different layers, like the conversations he has with Jim when he's like, we're all just faking it.
Mm.
No one's that confident. Like, we are all just faking it. When he's getting Jim ready to go out on the date, and he literally has that conversation where he's like, every guy is scared, but we can't show that we're scared because we're men. And I think also meeting his dad, who, like, lovely cameo by Dexter Fletcher. And you see, like, what his dad is like, that adds another layer to who Alex is as a person.
Yeah.
And then there's that really tender moment after the girls have drugged his dad while they're at the shop, when he thinks his dad's passed out from being drunk, and he, like, gives him a little kiss on the forehead
yeah,
as he's leaving.
Dad.
Yeah, and, like, they do a really good job. I think he's one of the only characters, because Jim, we kind of figure out straight away, comes from, like, a weirdish family mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I think Alex is the only character that, like, they, like, fully give him layers. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that is so much the writing. I do think a lot of it is Michael Soka's performance.
I am also glad that they didn't go like the stereotypical way with the scene where where Kitty rejects him in the bar. When she's like, oh, I don't want to hang out with you anymore because you're fucking ugly and boring. And he just throws a drink on her. And I'm really glad they didn't go like the full extra bit and have him be like, oh, you know, him berate her back. Because
yeah.
like... Well, you see that, like, all the time, in real life and in films. Like, guys, when they get rejected, they're like, oh, didn't want to sleep with you anyway, oh, you're fucking ugly, or, like, oh, you're fat, or whatever. And it's like, well, that person was everything that you're just saying prior. If that's how you felt, and you're not just acting out of anger and embarrassment, then that person was everything that you've just said, like, 5 minutes ago when you were trying to take them home.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
yeah,
and
like
I'm glad
the scene,
they stopped
like the
that scene
where,
at
where
that
he
point.
Literally. And also, I do feel like with that sequence, it's kind of a power twist, because the way he reacts in this is generally how women would react mm-hmm. in these kind of films. Of like a guy be like, well, I didn't want to fuck you. And we just, like, the girl would throw a drink and, like, storm off.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that really interesting that they give Alex what would generally be like a more feminine reaction to something like that.
And then when he's in the car, he's like, I like you, I respect you as a feminist and a woman. They're like, I didn't mean to throw a drink on you, and I'm sorry,
it's
bro.
The thing when he goes, I love you. I mean, I don't, but I could love you. he's wildly entertaining. But I think my favourite moment, talking about the when he drugs the drink scene.
Mm-hmm.
A, I'm not entirely sure what they take, because I don't think they are date rape drugs he gives them. But the girls don't drink it, but he puts them in all four drinks. So
yeah.
him and Jim are fucked up, man.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the great sequence where he goes home because it's Jim's birthday.
Yeah.
And he's like at the house with his parents, his sister, and oh my god, what's her name? It's not Kitty, it's
Lulu.
And he's like gurning. Yeah. There's the bit where he's like dancing just to himself in the corner. His parents are like, oh my god, God is speaking through him.
The thing is though, I don't know if he drugged the drinks just because like he was nervous as well and he kind of wanted to get himself on a certain level. Or whether he was like, if we're all drugged, like everybody's like, no one's gonna think that the behaviour is like weird. Like,
I honestly don't.
It's such a weird.
I feel a little bit like Alex as a person just didn't really think it through all that much. He was like, "Fuck it, we'll all do drugs."
And it's like when Jim knocks a drink out of Lulu's hand. He's like, "There's a moth in there," and I'm like, "Bruv, you literally could have said anything. Like, what the fuck?"
I think he just from everything we've learned up until this point is Jim is not good with women.
Jim's not good with anything.
No,
like.
But yeah, I'm gonna admit I was quite fond of Jim. He was so awkward. And everyone knows somebody kind of like Jim.
Yeah. yeah.
yeah. Everyone knows an Alex and everyone knows a Jim. Mm.
See, you know one guy who I always talk about who I fucking hate, who we saw in Tesco very recently, who used to be friends with me and Matt and Mark.
Yes.
He is Jim.
He is Jim.
Yeah.
Fair enough. No, I was thinking of when I thought of Jim, but obviously because I don't know him.
Yeah.
But my brain went to a specific person with Jim as well. And like Alex, I know so many people like Alex. I don't know anyone like Kitty, thankfully. Well, actually, now I'm thinking about it, I do know a Kitty and she is terrifying.
I'm not saying anything that's going to further incriminate me.
But I think that's, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Gal is terrifying. I love her so much. I think that's the great thing with this film. And I think it's a credit to the writing, because the film was written by the guy who plays Jim.
Yeah, who is actually a 30-year-old virgin.
Yeah. All of the characters, you can relate to somebody in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are all realistic, fleshed-out people. Like, you can sit there and watch this film and go, I know somebody like that. Like, I know that person. Which I think is a real credit to his writing, is that I watched it and I went, I know exactly who that person is because I know that person. That person exists in my life.
R.I.P. Stephen Barker.
Poor Stephen Barker.
You'd have loved my busted.
But I do think that like that's why this film works so well for me, is because the writing does a really good job of like relaying those characters back to somebody who, you know, maybe probably isn't a murderer, serial killer, but you know somebody like that.
Mm.
Like, you know, everyone's got, I feel like girls especially, everyone has that weirdly violent friend. We all have one. I adore mine. She's terrifying and she would kill me.
Scrappy-do-ass bitch.
But I love her dearly and I know that person. And I think that's why this film does work for me so much, is because I can relate each of the characters to somebody I know.
Mm.
And I'm like, they're really well written. For how little character development we realistically get, they are all already fully fleshed out characters.
I think the film does jump the shark a little bit with the whole dead dad ritual sacrifice thing. Like, because you don't, like, I don't need to know everything. Like, it's like Ready or Not. Like, I don't need to know all about the fucking spoilers for Ready or Not. I don't need to know all about the family's, like, deal with Mr. LaBelle and, like, why they need to fucking kill people. Like, I don't need to know that. Like, the film does a pretty good job of setting up that world as it is. But, like, with this one, it's so out of left field and it's so fucking random and weird. And it's just, like, you have no sense of, like, like, I guess if you make this movie, like, 10, 15 minutes longer and you just do some kind of, like, flashbacks to the girls with their dad, like, just to fill in those blanks of, like, well, what relationship did they have with their dad? Where's their mum? Like, where is this whole, like, sacrificial ritual, like, bring me back from the dead if I get murked thing come from? Like, just even, like, a scene or a piece of exposition that kind of explains it, because it's so fucking random and weird. And, like, it just feels really out of place with like the rest of the movie. Like, you literally could have taken that shit out and just had it as like the two sisters who are like serial killers, and it would have been like exactly the same film. And it probably would have been a little bit more enjoyable. Because the minute they start wheeling out the fucking dad corpse and doing all the fucking ritual sacrifice shit, the thing is,
it gets mentioned numerous times throughout the film.
Yeah, they keep saying that they need to do the sacrifice to bring their dad back, but they never explain why. And they never explain where that came from.
Their dad told them.
Yeah, but like what I'm saying is, you don't like. How did their dad know that? Why did their dad know that? Why did their dad die? Because it just is such a weird fucking thing for it to be in this movie that I'd kind of like some kind of explanation of like what was their relationship like with their dad? Why does Kitty care so much about fucking bringing him back and Lulu's not that fucking bothered? Like, just something that kind of explains why it's so fucking important for them to do this thing and like why it is this thing that they've got to do. Why is it male virgins? Why not women? Like, why does it, you know?
I don't know, babe.
Yeah, and
that
I just
doesn't matter to me. I like literally, I can go the rest of my life not knowing that information. Don't really care.
I just think it's a weird thing to put in a film that is otherwise like pretty grounded. Like you take that subplot out, and the film works perfectly fine without it.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is I feel like we've had this argument about other films with me on the other foot, and you'll argue it doesn't matter. I think you're picking because you don't like this film.
No, I just. There are bits, like, I've already talked about, there are bits about this film that I did like. I did enjoy parts of it. I just think that whole, like, final act with, like, the fucking dad corpse in the wheelchair, like, was just fucking nonsense.
Okay. Fair enough.
Do you not think?
No. It didn't bother me, like, at all. I feel like it was... I do feel like it was mostly there for like a little bit of fun more so than like anything serious, because it is kind of hilarious watching the corpse trying to stab him.
Yeah. It's like the scene in Texas Chainsaw when Grandpa's got the hammer.
I don't know, babe, because I've never fucking seen that film.
Yeah, but I have.
But I do feel like it was mostly there for it to be a bit of a like, look at the corpse trying to stab the guy, which was, it was hilarious watching the fucking attempted stabbing. I thought it was really funny, but like it didn't bother me. Like I'm not like bothered by it being there in any way, shape, or form. I do think it's the least egregious plot line that's been in a film like this. Fucking, I'm looking at you, Daughters of Darkness, or whatever the fuck that film was.
Actually,
called.
Somebody, one of the Letterboxd reviews references We Summon the Darkness.
We Summon the Darkness.
I can't remember. Like I saw it because I flicked through a few letter because like people write fucking paragraphs on Letterboxd. I was like, bruv, I'm not here to promote your Letterboxd. But yeah, somebody did make reference to like We Summon the Darkness being like a very similar.
Yeah.
That movie was fucking hot garbage.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I don't know. I don't know, man. Like, I don't... For a film that is, like, a horror comedy, I didn't find it particularly funny. And I didn't find the horror elements to be, like, strong enough for it to really work as one or the other. And I just think some of the performances, like, are a little bit over the top. Like, I think that's part of the problem with this film, is, like, the film deals with some kind of, like, serious subjects, but it never really gets its tone right. And then at the end, everybody's just fucking mental, like, and the performances kind of start to contradict. Like, the only two people who kind of remain consistent throughout this film are Lulu. And that's because she doesn't really get a lot to do. She's, of the four main characters, she's the one who gets, like, the least amount to do, or is the least, not interesting, but the one that has, like, the least amount of stuff to do. Jim also doesn't, his whole stance doesn't really change throughout the film. But, like, Kitty and, like, fucking Alex are all over the place. Like, that, like, Alex goes from being, like, this fucking ladcore pioneer, like, fucking spiking drinks and being a fucking arsehole, to, like, kung fu fighting a woman in his fucking pants, to then trying to shag her after they fought, to then, like, just being, like, a fucking, I don't know.
See, for me, I feel like Kitty and Alex are two of, like, the most stable performance.
Oh, no, mate. Kitty goes, like, full wide-eyed fucking lunacy.
Kitty makes complete sense, because when you first meet her, she's already kind of batshit. And you see that progression throughout the film of her getting more and more, like, manic.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the film, she's full-blown fucking manic. Because all she cares about is bringing her dad back. Like, that is it. And I feel like Alex is the same. It's like, you kind of... Alex stays at kind of a level, and his character... like, the entire ending fight between him and Kitty makes so much sense in how Alex reacts. Because he's not a good fighter.
No.
She kicks his ass repeatedly. And all of the shots Alex gets in are just lucky shots.
Lucky?
Lucky. Like, they're all just lucky shots. Like, none of them are like... like, I think he manages to get a punch in once. And then the rest of it is just, like, he's managed to weave at the right time. Like, none of it is, like, him being good at fighting. It's him just...
mm.
basically using his environment and being super lucky about it. So that, like, the entire sequence makes so much sense to me, and where they end up, because I do feel like Alex is the kind of man who would try and fight back, but he's also super apologetic every time he hits him. He's like, I'm really sorry about that, but you're being crazy.
And then they randomly start to try and have sex halfway
and then she kisses him halfway through, which I think is like her trying to distract him, because she's like, this man thinks with his dick and little else. And it fucking works as well, which again is very on brand for Alex's character. I think it's delightful. I just like that fight sequence between the two of them is fucking hilarious. Because she hits him over the head with a glass bottle and it doesn't stop him. Then she does it again. And he's like, I'm fucking bleeding out.
Mate, why is Kiss with a Fist by Florence and the Machine not playing in that scene?
That was a good call. And I do like it again when Alex shows up at the end and he's like, Jim, I'm here to save you. And it just falls face down. I am slightly biased, obviously, but Alex is my fave. Tiny, teeny, tiny little bit biased because I do adore Michael Soka.
Also, I feel like we have to get to a point now where adult humans can't ever refer to their dads as daddy in films anymore.
Yeah.
Because every time she said it, Alec, with the passion, more energy. Every time I was like, nah, this is creepy, man.
Daddy.
Yeah. Don't do that. That's so creepy. there's gonna be someone out there listening to this podcast who's going to make that fucking ringtone now.
Please don't. That's creepy.
You know it. It's going to happen.
Did I tell you I found a book the other day? It was people ranking the internet daddies.
Yes, you showed me. I was disturbed.
I was howling. Not only, I don't think I told you the second part, side note, so it gave you the rating, like the top trump card for each internet dad. And then like the second part was like a fan fiction, like a reader insert fan fiction about said person. Delightful. I'm going to buy it at some point. I need it in my life. It's hilarious.
I just can't even.
Just gonna live the YN dream.
I find it so creepy. it's one of those words that's genuinely been ruined for me by human beings on the internet.
See, it's one of those because my dad, I have to call dad because obviously I can't use the first one because that's weird. And also I can't use father because whenever I do, all I think about is the IT crowd. Father!
Oh.
Matt Berry.
I will be your father figure. I just call my dad mate.
You do, actually. You very rarely call your dad dad.
Yeah, me and my dad just call each other mate. My dad's like, you know what, mate? What's up? And I'm like, now, what's going on?
I'm just like, hey, dad. How's fishing?
Yeah.
Catch anything? Literally, our in every conversation is, catch anything, dad? How's pond? All he ever fucking does is goes fishing.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
I might start calling him Papa.
I find it strange that this, and I don't know if this is just because of like her personal life being a ice cream van entrepreneur with her partner and now a mother. But this is the last thing that Georgia Groom was in.
Mm.
Like, she's done radio work, like voiceover work, because I guess you can do that from like home. But yeah, like acting wise, this is the last thing that she was in and might ever be in.
I mean, to be fair though, it's like a weird thing because Rupert Grint doesn't act anymore either.
Yeah, because they've both quit acting, and that's what I mean. I think they bought like a fleet of ice cream vans.
I know they bought a fleet. I know Rupert Grint bought an ice cream van.
Yeah,
and it's like a working one.
Yeah,
I don't think he uses it as an ice cream van. I just think it was like one of those weird things he always really wanted to wear an ice cream
could
van.
You
like,
fucking fuck
I'm Rupert Grint.
Could you fucking imagine though if like
getting an ice cream, you're like fucking Ron Weasley.
You hear that fucking jingle and like Ron Weasley and fucking George Groom and their little kid turn up.
Well, it's like fucking Mr. Weasley, Mark.
Yeah. I don't know his surname.
During fucking lockdown, was working at, like, delivering pottery. Like, the paint your own pottery things.
Yeah.
For, like, not where we live, but where my friend lives.
I'm aware of this.
Was, like, delivering them. And my friend literally just answered the door. I was like, that's fucking Mr. Weasley. Mr. Weasley was at my house.
Yeah,
why was Mr. Weasley at my house?
Like, I find it so weird, like, jobs that celebrities got. Because, again, it's not like, not every celebrity did. Because a lot of, like... People could still do film productions and stuff.
Well, I feel like the with Mark Williams, there we go. I think it was just like he was friends with the people who ran the pottery shop, which is like, I'm not ready for now.
But like, I remember some of the girls from The Big Moon, like their drummer, Fern, she became an Amazon delivery driver. Because she's like, well, we can't tour. We can't. She's like, I still have to make income. Like,
well, it was, what's his face, wasn't it? Oh my God, what's his name? The comedian who got turned down by Tesco.
Oh, Jason Manford.
Driving for Audi or Iceland.
Yeah, yeah. I think he was driving for Iceland. Yeah, because the thing is, like, especially, I guess, performers, people in the performing arts, because the film industry didn't necessarily shut down completely. Like, it shut down a little bit until they figured out how to, like, make films during COVID. But, like, yeah, like, comedians, musicians and stuff like that. Like, musicians, other musicians, I like, took up songwriting. They started writing songs for people. And or, yeah, like, in Jason Manford's case, he became a fucking delivery driver, which I think is, like, admirable. Because a lot of people are like, oh, you know, like, being a celebrity, you must make, like, a lot of money. And I'm like, not necessarily. Especially, like, when they have families and, like, a source of income is, like, taken away from them. I guess they're, like, normal people, especially, like... If you have to live within a certain set of means, like, everybody's like... But yeah, I just love the fact that, like, Rupert Grint is sitting like a fucking dragon on a mound of money, because everybody always talks about HP. And they were like, you know, obviously, like, him, Emma Watson and Daniel Radcliffe, I think, are the three of the children, like, the highest earners. And then I would imagine... Tom Felton is like the bracket underneath that. And then you've got like your, what's
Bonnie White.
Yeah, fucking Matthew, what's his face?
Lewis.
Yeah, Snake Killer.
Yeah, Bonnie Wright.
The twins.
Ivana Lynch.
Yeah. You got all those guys who kind of like made a decent living, but they're not, their royalty checks aren't as big. So, you know, it kind of makes sense that like, you know, Rupert Grint, I don't think he ever wanted to be an actor. And, like, I kind of assume, like, maybe with Georgia Groom, like, it's something that she's like, I did it, tried it. She's like, now I'm at this other stage of my life.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, because I don't know what Rupert Grint has done.
He was in that, what's it film? The one about the guy who creates the girl, Ruby something.
Ruby Sunday? No.
No, the guy who writes the story about the girl. Is he in that? I think he's in that. Him and Paul Dano, I think they're in that. He's not been in a lot. He's not done a lot of films.
I don't think he's in the film you're thinking of.
Oh.
Yeah, no, he definitely wasn't. I, you know, I say he doesn't really act anymore.
He's in a rom-com, though, isn't he?
He was in Snatch.
Yeah.
Which was 2018. He was in Cabinet of Curiosities, which was 2022. Yeah. He was in Knocking the Cat at the Cabin.
Yes, he was, actually. Yeah,
and then
right.
He's in 40 episodes of Savant. Or Servant.
Yeah,
Servant.
Which is the other M. Night Shyamalan thing.
Yeah, so he's
so
in
I thought
that.
He'd retired.
No, I think he took a while off where he didn't really do anything.
Fuck, I forgot he's in Knock at the Cabin. He's actually really good in that movie as well.
Yeah, he hasn't really done a massive amount.
What's that fucking rom-com I'm thinking of that he's in?
Wild Target?
No.
Cherry Bomb?
Maybe. I thought he was in the Ruby whatever film.
No.
With Paul Dano.
It's in Driving Lessons. Driving Lessons is quite good.
Yeah.
But no, I can't find it. I can't see any like that I'd like immediately go on and look at. Oh, that's a rom-com.
But fucking imagine this being like your last film. Like, imagine peacing out after this.
After this. Go on a high note at least.
Yeah, it is a weird film, man. Like it's a film that I didn't enjoy, but I'm not angry that I watched it. Like, because you can see like kernels of good ideas there. I just think that the tone is very confusing. And I just didn't find some of the central performances to be particularly interesting. I don't know, man. I could have done without that really fucking awkward scene with his family. Also, did you notice that they wrote Lulu into wearing one of the shirts? Because when they leave, she's got one of the fucking shirts of his face on.
Yeah, but it's the misprinted one.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm just like, what is
so that? Funny.
Like, I thought the meeting your family scene from Saltburn was fucking, which also revolves around a birthday, was fucking awkward. But, like, that scene is just, like, really awkward. And, like, again, what is it with, like, British families? They're like, hey, my son's been out till, like, 9 o'clock. He was meant to be here for dinner at, like, 6. He's turned up intoxicated and with a girl that we've never met who we should just invite in and then do weird shit in front of her. Like, British families are wild, man.
We are.
Like, yeah. I won't go any. I won't elaborate any further than that. But yeah, I just think it's that whole like we're willing to accept people into our home, and still just be weird in front of them. Like,
yeah. I sometimes feel like we should have that, but I should behave myself. So, I recently met my brother's girlfriend for the first time.
She's delightful.
She is delightful. We love her. At a funeral, always a great place to meet somebody. And I was sat in my brain going, I should really, like, be normal. I was not normal. I mean, none of us were normal. My family are chaotic. But yeah, none of us toned it down. We were all just like, welcome to trial by fire.
I did not.
You did not either. You were 100% top shelf on it.
I was the guy putting fun in funeral.
You were. You and my nan. Weirdly.
Your nan's amazing. I love your nan.
You and my nan made a comedy double act like no other.
Your nan's amazing. I love her.
She's batshit.
Yeah, but she's the best. Your nan is the goat. She is the greatest of all time. She is the nan that all other nans should aspire to be like. I love her.
We all do. She's so my nan who adores has decided she's dying at 84.
Yeah.
She might change her mind, but she's pretty set on it at the moment. She's 84. It was just the way she was like, yeah, I've died at 84. I don't want a funeral. Just put me out of the bins. Not bothered. Let them take me and just burn me. When they take me, I was like, all right, Nana. So my brother's going to hire an assassin to kill her on her 84th birthday.
As
a surprise, that'll be nice for her.
I have another question for you.
Yeah.
Because Tom Sturridge has quite high billing in this movie.
He does for his 5 second cameo.
I was expecting him to be like another one of the victims.
Yeah, so was I. I was fully expecting him and Dougie Pointer to be like other victims.
But like, what's his deal? Like, he did the rocking boat 8 years before this.
Yeah.
And then he does like Sandman, what, 5 years after this? 4 years after this? Because when Sandman came out, 2022?
Last year?
2022, surely.
No, I swear it was a 23 production.
Nah. It was the same year as fucking season 4 of Stranger Things.
2022,
Things.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did Velvet Buzzsaw.
But he's like...
He did Mary Shelley. He's in The Hollow Crown.
He's quite a high build for someone who's in a scene in this.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, by this point, he's quite fair into his career. So at this point, he'd been in Vanity Fair, Boat That Rocked, Waiting for Forever, Effie Gray, Far From the Maddening Crowd. He played Henry the Sixth in Far From the Maddening Crowd. Mm. So like he was pretty, like, for the cast of this, he was quite...
He's more famous than everybody else in this movie.
Yeah. And obviously from this, he went on and did like Velvet Buzzsaw, Mary Shelley.
He's relegated to a cameo.
Yeah.
As some little like fuckboy in eyeliner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I genuinely...
He likes playing a fuckboy in eyeliner.
I genuinely thought he was going to be in this movie more than he was. And I was kind of disappointed that he wasn't. Because he's one of those actors who's like... He has a very aloof acting style. He has that weird, like, mumbly whisper voice that, like... Hello, I'm Tom Sturridge. I could read you to sleep. I could not. I'm going to be Sandman. And he has that very aloof.
It's almost like Tom was in the room with me then.
But he has that very aloof acting style as well. You know that, like, I don't know if you, like, I don't want to use Keanu as an example because I think Keanu's actually a really good actor. But like, he has that acting style where he looks like he just can't be bothered. Like, he looks like he just turned up one day and just like they said, stand over there. He's like, yeah, all right, cool guy in the room.
You know, see, I love Tom Sturridge. Like,
that's not a slight on him at all. But he does have that kind of like, hey, cool guy here.
Cool guy here.
Yeah, like fucking Ellis. Tom Ellis is the same. He has that kind of like cool guy in the room, cool guy here. Just kind of vibe about
it. Like a Tom thing.
Yeah, and I just find it fascinating that like, given the premise of this movie, like you would expect him to be like one of the victims. Yeah. Like you said, you would expect him to be either one of the victims or more central to like their plot. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it would have made more sense if to get more utilage out of him, if the girl, like, hang on.
Bless you.
The scene where Kitty rejects Alex for her to be like, turn in the club and like he happens to be there. And she's like, oh, I know him. Like, this will piss him off if I go and, like, flirt with his friend. Even though it's kind of established already that he maybe has a girlfriend.
He does. Or he's dating their friend.
Slash groupie. I don't know.
He's dating their friend.
But, like, you kind of would have expected him to have been, like, more heavily involved in this film. And it's kind of fascinating to me that it's, like, he's not.
Yeah. Which is disappointing because Tom Sturridge is great.
Yeah, I'd have kind of liked to see him dump a bookcase on someone and fucking stamp on it. That's another, like, I'm sorry, this is going to be a really, really weird niche fucking thing. These two girls are rich. They live in a fucking manor house, right? That was the most shoddily put together, cheap IKEA, MDF fucking bookshelf I have ever seen in my life.
All I'm saying is, up until this point, I had not in my life seen Michael Soka in a pair of boxer shorts and a mostly undone shirt bouncing on a bookcase. And I'm glad that I can live now having seen that.
But you know what I mean, though? That bookcase was like really...
It was really poorly put together.
It was a piss poor bookcase.
And it was not great. It did look very IKEA made.
I was like, who the fuck is he planning to kill? Like,
I think it looked like it was going to be heavy.
Yeah.
It was not.
No, it was nonsense. I was not impressed with the bookcase. Is there anything else that you would like to add about this film?
No.
Do you agree with the assessment that it's one of the best British horror comedies since Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah, because we don't have a lot. What's in competition for it, babe? Lesbian Vampire Killers.
Slaughterhouse Rules.
I mean, Slaughterhouse Rules is quite fun. But I'd agree with that, because I don't think we have that many great horror comedies.
I think Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is a better film.
The film with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, though, is it's not really a comedy.
Yeah, it's weirdly fucking hilarious.
But it's not really a comedy, though, is it? It's a Victorian drama.
Yeah.
With zombies.
Yeah. Written by Queen Jane Austen. Yeah, you're right. Like, I think about British Severance.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Severance, bro?
No.
Dude, Severance is great.
I mean,
Danny Dyer's in it.
We could do it.
Danny Dyer's in it.
We could do it.
Maybe.
What does that make my films for this month?
We'll talk about it later. Anyway.
Okay.
Eat Locals.
Oh, you haven't watched it yet.
So no, but that seems like it's going to be quite funny.
It does. But I do feel like maybe we should... We'll talk about it in a second, because I think that's on brand for me. Yeah, we haven't watched that yet, so that might be good. Who's in that one? Why should I pick that one?
It's fucking Daredevil, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ben Affleck. the one true Daredevil.
It's Charlie?
Cox.
Charlie. My brain went, it's Charlie Cox. So I was like, no, it's not.
Charlie Cox and Dix. Yeah, I mean, I completely disagree with you. I don't think it's a great horror comedy, but...
But what's better than it in British horror comedy?
Severance.
Okay, so you've got one other film.
Just trying to think. I'm trying to think of like movies that came out in like the early 2000s.
We don't have that many great horror comedies.
Black Sheep.
Isn't that... It's a Kiwi film.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wait, why do I always think this movie's like British?
Because he's sheep. We assume as well.
Wait, why do I always think this movie's set in Wales?
Because there's sheep in the title, we assume. I'm pretty sure Black Sheep is a New Zealand film.
Take back everything I said. Disregard that last comment from me.
I'm pretty sure. Because I'm pretty sure I've made that mistake before.
Yeah, I think you might be right now that you've said it.
Oh, no, it might not be. No, yeah, New Zealand film.
Ah. Oh.
It was like here, it was like the brother Angus. And I was like, that sounds like it's a British name. No, it is New Zealand.
Fuck.
So you literally have got Shaun of the Dead and Severance.
Yeah, I mean, Attack the Block, I guess.
Would you say Attack the Block was a better horror comedy than this?
Yeah, 100%.
Would you?
Yeah, bruv.
I'm very surprised because you didn't like that film very much either. I'm determined to have you hate every film this month.
Mate, I gave Attack the Block 3 stars.
Yeah.
So.
But you also complained about it the entire episode and while we were watching it.
Look, I'm a very complex man.
You got the facilities for that big man.
Right, so what are your final thoughts on Double Date?
I think it was really fun. I think the writing was really good. All the characters seemed fully fleshed out. I am very biased, but my favourite character will be Alex because Lord bless giving us Michael Soker. I think Kitty is fucking an absolute maniac and I love her dearly in my soul. She's the kind of level of insanity I would want to reach. Do you know what I mean?
It's a little bit too much for me.
I ain't got the facilities for that anyway.
Mate, do you know what's really funny though? You know, and like I will never reveal this in public. If you ever want to know this story and you meet me in real life, ask me and I'll tell you. But you know the thing that I revealed to you about my ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
When we literally first met. And that is a level of like, oh boy. And even knowing that and knowing that that's a real life thing that happened to me, I still think Kitty's a little bit too much. I'm like, nice.
I love Kitty. She's fucking batshit.
She's a little bit.
I do think the pacing was slightly off in places. I do think at times the tone was off. I think the ending seemed a little bit rushed.
Yeah.
Personally. But overall, like, I enjoyed it. It's the kind of film, again, I'd watch it again. I'd shove it on the background while I was doing other stuff. Which is how I watch most movies, if I'm completely honest. So I'm going to give it a 4.
Fucking hell.
I liked it. I thought it was fun. And it's like, it's a brisk 90 minutes. You know how I feel about films. Anything over 90 minutes is pointless. Unless I liked it, at which point that's fine.
Dog Soldiers. That's a good horror comedy.
Is it a horror comedy?
Yeah, it's quite funny.
I haven't seen it. Mate, or if I have, I haven't seen
Google,
it.
Google British horror comedies while we're doing this. So my final thoughts are, I thought the film was tonally inconsistent. I thought the majority of the characters were dislikable. I found the finale to be a little bit too OTT. I thought that the plot could have been a little bit better explained as to why it had to be a ritual sacrifice and a little bit more about the girl's relationship with their dad and how they found themselves in the situation that they're in. I didn't find the film Neva to work particularly well as a horror movie. I didn't think it was particularly tense or well thought out as a horror movie, but I also didn't find the film particularly funny either. So I think it failed across the board for me. I'd probably give it a 2 if I was being generous. As I say, I'm not angry that I saw it, but I also don't understand why the film got praised as much as it did from everybody else that saw it. I feel like maybe I missed something. But yeah, so that's my thoughts on it. So as always, guys, have you seen this little British horror film? If you have, let us know what you think of it. If you haven't, it's on Amazon Prime. You can check it out like now. If you do check it out, let us know our thoughts. We are on social media, SIMAHFpod on Twitter/X. So I'm Married Horror Fan, all lowercase, all one word, on Tumblr and Instagram. We are both on Letterboxd. I'm at zombie_Simon. Lee is at Leeton Lawliot on Letterboxd if you want to follow us on there. As always, guys, we'll be back next week with an episode next Monday. We'll also be back this Friday with our Crossing the Stream, where we will be looking at... What's the film we're doing? It's... What If You Were the Killer, is it? The Killer Might Be You. You Might Be the Killer.
You Might Be the Killer.
With Alison Hannigan in it. So stay tuned for that. Well, that'll be on Friday. And yeah, and then next Monday, we will be back with a brand new episode for you. As always, guys, stay spooky, stay safe, take care. Bye-bye.